All right, you're listening to the Bon Appetit Foodcast. I'm Adam Rappaport. On today's show, LA's favorite Frenchman, Ludo Lefebvre. Ludo, chef, owner of Trois Mecs, Petit Trois, and Trois Familia, as well as Ludo Bird, his amazing fried chicken sandwich franchise. Awesome story on Ludo in our December-January issue, out now, in which he cooks the perfect steak au poivre and does fondue and all sorts of other snowy treats. All right, here's Ludo and me talking restaurants, cooking, and what it's like being an expat Frenchman in sunny Los Angeles. So how old are your kids now?
5 years old.
And they don't eat anything?
No, it's getting more difficult to feed them good food now.
They're not. They're like, they're American kids. They're not French kids.
They're both.
They're both.
But no, it's very difficult. I remember when they're 3 years old, 4, they eat everything. I was so excited about that. I'm so proud of my kid. And now guess what? They're like everybody kids now. It's more difficult now to make them eat vegetable or good fish, you know. You know, when I do a nice sole meuniere at home, they prefer to have their fish stick.
Exactly.
You know,
my son. So yeah, I have a very difficult eater. My son Marlon just turned 9, and he won't eat chicken if it's not breaded. So he would probably like Ludo Bird. Ludo Bird and enjoy your fried chicken place.
I love it too.
But it's like, yeah, actually, chickens don't come that way. You have to, trying to explain to him roast chicken is just like, it's such a foreign concept. And yeah, as a dad, we're just like, oh my God, I feel so bad. But they can be very stubborn.
But bread chicken, it's good. You have a good palate, your son. I love bread chicken.
So I want to talk fried chicken with you. I want to talk about how you got started as a chef. You've got Ludo Bird, you've got Trois Mecs and Petit Trois. All these sort of very LA restaurants, but you're, as I think you described yourself in the latest sort of season of Mind of a Chef, you're just a redneck from Burgundy.
I'm a redneck from Burgundy. Not a lot of things happen in Burgundy, just wine and food.
So at what point did you say, I want to get involved in serious cooking and work in Michelin-starred places back in France when you were young?
I start cooking at 14 years old. Get kicked out one time from school, and my dad don't know what to do with me. And one day he told me, you're going to go to work now to learn a job, a métier. And he told me you have three choices. You can be a hairdresser, you can be a mechanician, like fixing a car, you know, fixing the car, change your oil, or you can be a cook. And I pick, I'll be a cook, I love to eat.
Yeah.
That's it. And I was before cooking a little bit with my grandma, you know, like crepe or fake bread with a powder, mixed with water, you know.
Did you have any idea how taxing and demanding working in a really good French kitchen would be?
I have no idea. You know, I remember the first day I went to my first work in the first kitchen. I have no idea where I was putting my feet. No idea. Like, yeah, I want to be a chef, but at 14 years old, I never realized how it was a very long hour and a lot of discipline in the kitchen. And I guess I like the discipline. Because I was not a bad kid, but do stupid things, you know?
Yeah.
And actually, I love the discipline. At 14 years old, I love it. When people tell me what to do, still clean the floor or peel potato or do the dishwasher, I love it.
So at what point did you realize that you actually had some skill and some talent?
I would say maybe 14 years ago, not before that.
Really?
I think it was in 96 when I moved here in America, in Los Angeles in 96, and when I become a chef, you know?
But what about going back before that?
Like, I don't know.
But you do know. Like, why did those chefs, you're talking about guys like Gagnère and Pessard, these legendary French chefs, why did they have confidence in you?
Because I was always on time, always say yes. Still, when they abuse me, I say yes, more chef, please, you know? But I was always ready. I was always, I think, because I was very consistent, you know.
Which is hugely important.
It's very important in the kitchen, you know. I was very, very consistent and always ready on time for service. I was taking my job very seriously.
There's a big difference between being a cook and being a chef, obviously, and creativity and thinking on your own. When did you start doing that?
You know, it like very, very late. You know, and like I say, when I start to be a head chef at Laurent Jewelry. Mm-hmm. Before that, I was just, listening to the chef and do what he was saying. Like, okay, you do a seule meunière, do like this. Mm-hmm. I was just listening to my chef. At my time, when I was in the kitchen, Adam, you don't have really the opportunity to be creative. Mm-hmm. You say, chef, and yeah. You do what the chef's saying, you know. Like now, the kitchen are more open. Like now, like at Trois Mecs, I create dishes with my cooks.
And they actually have input.
Yes,
they can
and put
pitch ideas.
And some idea. I don't know, when I was 18 years old or 20 years old, if Pierre Gagnard who came to see me in the kitchen, Ludo, let's go work on the meat dish together. I don't know if I will be creative. You know, I don't know.
So,
but now time changed. The kids now, young cooks, are very creative.
Well, I want to talk about that because it seems like such a different world.
Yeah.
Becoming a chef now, especially in America, compared to Paris, working at a Michelin 3-star restaurant. When you went to L'Orangerie, which at the time was kind of the classic French restaurant in L.A., do you remember like what was the first dish that you yourself created that you were like, oh, this is pretty good?
Yeah, I almost get fired for that, but
what was it?
So I was working at L'Orangerie in Los Angeles, and it was in the 1998, and I was a chef over there for 3 years. And I was cooking very classic French food. But I think the first dish I did, it was start to be a little myself, creative, and not just classic French, because L'Orangerie was very classic French food. It was like a warm asparagus salad with a foie gras ice cream. The owner went crazy. But it was like the warm, you know, and the cold together, and the foie gras was an ice cream. So at that time, it was very fancy, you know.
Yeah.
And ice cream was not very trained yet. Like, yeah. You don't put ice cream with savory dish.
Do you think the dish was good or just kind of different?
I think it
looking
can
back
be,
at it.
Be better, but uh-huh. I think the concept was not bad, actually. You know, mm-hmm. It was warm and cold together, the foie gras melting, it's cold. Yeah, it was making sense.
Was that the beginning of the end for you at L'Orangerie, do you think?
Yes, I think so, because after I realized it was a lot of different door for cooking and not just classic French. Mm-hmm. All my life, I cooked classic French in France too, you know, with the same ingredients and everything. But when I moved in Los Angeles in 96, I discovered so many flavors at that time we didn't have in Paris. You know, like we don't have a Korean food in Paris in the 90s. We don't have a lot of sushi restaurant in the 90s. So all this food I didn't know before, Mexican food. Yeah. I never tested Mexican food before 96.
But at a restaurant like L'Orangerie, the owner didn't want those influences.
No, they don't want that. You want classic French. So I discovered this flavor and I cannot use this flavor in my cooking.
Yes.
So that's what after I left L'Orangerie to go on my own.
So you went to Bastide?
To Bastide, yeah. Where like I can express myself, do whatever I want.
And what was that like? So when you opened the restaurant, what was the reception like? What were the expectations for that restaurant?
They expecting French food, you know, buttercream. I was all my technique are French, but I was using a lot of different flavor I never used before from Los Angeles. So it was very interesting. Like you can eat in 2000, I was doing a foie gras and kimchi.
Yeah.
It was making sense. You know, in France, we do foie gras with cabbage.
Yeah.
And kimchi is cabbage, you know, too. So I was really playing with a lot of different flavor and a lot of different combinations. So it was a big risk for Los Angeles. Some people understand that, some they didn't.
Yeah.
Like food critics say it was amazing. Some they kill me.
if you're not pissing off someone, you're not doing your job.
No, exactly. You know.
Yeah. What was it like? So being a head chef in the kitchen and being in charge of people, and especially young American cooks, what was that like for you? And how challenging was that to be a boss?
I love to be the boss. I love to be the chef because my main thing when I'm cooking, I really really love to teach, and that's what I love to have a young cook with me. Because I love to teach. I'm very proud to be their mentor. I have so much luck in life where I am now because I have a very good mentor with me, like Pierre Gagnère, Marc Menot, yep. Mr. Passard, always help me for a lot of things. And so I really want to pass that also to the new generation.
Okay, all right. So that sounds very correct, politically correct.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been to Trois Mecs before.
Mm-hmm.
I also watched that Jonathan Gold documentary.
Mm-hmm.
You are a very intimidating person in the kitchen. there are times where you have a stare. I don't know what the word is, but it's very intense. And like when a young chef screws up, I feel like you're like burning lasers through
it. Yeah, but
you could be tough on the chefs.
Yeah, I know them. Sometimes, yes, you know, yeah, you're right. Sometimes you need to have some discipline. You have a time for playing and some time to be serious.
But how do you balance that? It's very simple. Disciplined and also being inspiring and mentoring them, you know?
So when I get in mad, you know, I'm just taking a Xanax. And I'm shaking.
It's LA. It's cool, man.
Look, I'm getting older now. I have kids, so I'm more mellow now.
Yeah.
You know, but I think to scream in the kitchen and for express yourself, you know, it's finished that. You need to just take in time and breathe and just talk with the cook and make sure you understand, you know, and repeat. It's about teaching.
There's a great scene in this season's Mind of a Chef on PBS, of which you are the star chef, I guess, which they follow you around for how many episodes with you?
Eight.
Eight. And you're at your Ludo Bird franchise at the Staples Center. And you're explaining to these fast food workers how to make a fried chicken sandwich and how to make it well. And that matters. And doing that well, there's a technique that there's the right way and there's the wrong way.
So hard. You know, to do fried chicken for the mass is very difficult, but fried chicken need to be bred. You have a technique for that.
Yeah, let's talk about your technique for the sandwiches.
I mean, because when I grew up in France, we do roasted chicken. It's the same concept, Adam. In the three-star Michelin restaurant, the chicken need to be crispy, the skin, and moist. The meat need to be moist.
So how do you achieve that at
Ludo Bird? It's the same concept. It's the same concept.
So what's your technique?
You know, the technique is really to breading the chicken an hour before.
And how do you bread?
Dry, let's talk about wet, dry.
Okay, so flour.
Flour, buttermilk, flour.
And then, what do you season? Do you season?
Season with paprika, with garlic, onions, powder, and a lot of herbs de Provence to put a little French touch on that, you know. But, you know, and after the flour and the buttermilk become very gluey, so it really stuck to the meat.
And you really pack it in there.
You know, you have the... In the flour, in the liquid, the first liquid, you need to create the lumps. You know, you want the big lumps on the chicken. That's what makes the chicken crispy.
Those big, craggy pieces.
Yeah, I love that, man.
And so you put it in after you go flour, egg wash, and then when you put it in that next one, first of all, put a little bit of egg wash in that flour so it gets lumpy, right?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And then you really got to pack it in there with your hands.
Pack it, like, very strong, you know, and after, again, you go get in the wet and after dry. But it's a process, Adam. You know?
But you have to teach the people who are working at Ludo Bird. If they don't understand that, then the chicken sandwich isn't any good.
Yeah. No, I know it's fried chicken, but I care. I want them to care too, to be proud about what they're doing. I'm so proud of a perfect crispy fried chicken sandwich. I love it. You know, I'm so proud of that. So like I'm proud to be at Ludo Bird, au Trois Mecs, au Petit Trois. I love to cook everywhere, you know, in the stadium or in my kitchen. I care.
So how do you ensure quality when you're not around, when you're not at Ludo Bird or if you're not at Trois Mecs one day or Petit Trois? Do you worry?
I'm worried every day, yeah, of course. Of course. I mean, you know, it's my job to teach them, but mistakes happen, you know. It's hard to be consistent, you know.
Yeah.
And mistakes happen.
Well, that goes back to what you were saying at a restaurant like Arpège. It's Pessard's job to be creative, but it's the line cook's job to be consistent.
Be consistent.
You know?
Listen, in cooking and any business, if you don't have a good team, you are nobody. I don't cook every night in my restaurant, and that's true. You know, my staff, my chef, André, or my chef Will at B3, or Gary at Trois Familia, you know, they're over there and make sure everything's okay. I'm not in a lot of chefs now who are not in our restaurant anymore.
Yeah.
And it's just true, the thing changed. In my time in the 90s, the chef was always in this restaurant. It's crazy how things change now, how the lifestyle changed. That's the lifestyle.
Well, it's almost like now if you're a successful chef, you have to have some sort of fast casual concept like Ludo Bird or Shake Shack. Jose Andres doing beef steak and stuff. Yeah, you need that as much as anything.
As anything, exactly. And I think also chef now, for myself, I realize as a chef, I don't need to be in the three-star Michelin restaurant to do good food.
Yeah.
I can do a good sandwich and enjoy eating a good sandwich in the sun, in Central Park, in the afternoon. It's amazing too. Don't need to be in the fancy restaurant.
You might even enjoy that more.
It's a little cool, you know. I mean, I don't know, but, you know. But no, you know, I mean, I realize that as a chef, you can, good people love lobster, but people love also a sandwich.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
And I think a chef, we need to, cook for everybody.
And you also, you don't need white tablecloths and Bernardo china. And after you left Bastide, you started doing the Ludo Bites pop-ups.
What?
How many years?
I did that for 5 years.
How'd you make a living? And talk about that. Like, how did...
It wasn't bad a living, actually, you know, because when you look the business before being a Ludo Bird, the pop-up restaurant, it was no investment for me. I was renting a restaurant.
So you'd find a space for how long would each one last? Go for?
3 months, 4 months. So I was just renting a space where the restaurant was equipped with a chair, table, a fork.
There was already a kitchen set up.
So it was not any expense for me. I was entering the restaurant, paying my rent, and make money right away.
And so they're sort of in between tenants. And so, like, hey, we got a space if you want to use it.
Yeah,
And how many nights a week would you do?
It was depends. Sometimes can be 4 or 5. It depends, Adam, where I was, you know, because Ludo Bite, was my pop-up restaurant. But every month we are moving around Los Angeles, different location, almost like a circus, you know.
Yeah, and
all the time it was a different location and different menu, different show. So.
And what role did your wife play in this?
Everything.
She was cooking. She runs a tight ship.
Yeah. I think a lot of men, successful men, have a smart woman behind. That's true.
She's very organized. Could you have done it without her?
No, I would not be here now if I was not married my wife, definitely.
Yeah.
I'm a good chef. I know how to cook, but it's a lot behind too, you know, people don't see.
Yeah.
And Chrissy do a lot of things, you know, a lot.
That's the difference between running a good restaurant and running a profitable restaurant.
Yeah, exactly. And just,
So you did that for what, 3 years or so?
Yeah, 4 years almost.
4 years.
Four years.
And how many different you did? How many pop ups?
12.
12 over the in 3-4 months
yeah.
each.
It was good, huh? It was fun.
So you were making a living.
Yeah.
Doing well.
Freedom. For a cook. It was so good to have my freedom and do what I want. I was not anymore in the fancy restaurant with a white top, white jacket, white tablecloth. I was doing what I want the first time in my life.
Yeah. And Nico,
it was amazing. It's a good feeling, liberty.
A chef like in New York City, I mean, you have one of those restaurants, you're paying hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in rent.
Trust me, I know. I heard
a lot of
that.
Pressure.
Like a lot of people ask me, why you don't do a Petit Roi? Mm-hmm. You know, in New York, we have location for you. Yeah, what's the deal? No, thank you. I don't want to come.
Yeah.
It's too expensive here.
No, it's a lot. It's a lot of work and a very slim profit margin. So you're doing these pop-ups, you're having fun, and then you meet these two little short guys named John and Vinny.
John and Vinny.
Yeah.
I know, it's crazy. Do pop-up, you know, meet John and Vinny. We did a lot of dinner together, a lot of fun.
In Mind of a Chef, you say, John and Vinny, they are unique. how would you describe those two guys?
These two guys, man. They are smart cookies, these two guys, you know. They take their job seriously, but not too seriously also.
Yeah, because they kind of come off as the two most fun guys in LA, but then you're like, wow, you guys are really smart. You run really sharp business. They have Animal and Son of a Gun and John and Vinny's and a hugely successful catering operation.
John and Vinny, they did a lot for Los Angeles, you know, for like the last 8 years, you know. They take a lot of risk with their food. They really created a lot of animals. Was really a new concept for Los Angeles. Imagine what they did when they opened 8 years ago, just feeding in Los Angeles like a little, duck liver. I mean, all this part of the animals, people don't want to eat really in Los Angeles, pig here. It was a big risk. But after people like it, you know, I think they're great cooks. They put a lot of flavor in their food and they're very accessible.
Yeah, I think that their cooking has really evolved since Animal also.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of made that statement and then they've sort of evolved and matured since then. I don't know if matured, but evolved. But there's one thing to like someone. There's another thing to actually go and do business with them. And
so
what convinced you that I'm actually going to put my money on the line with these guys?
Johnny is very smart.
Yeah.
You know, Johnny and Vinny are very smart. When we did dinner together all the time at Animals, they saw how we sold out so fast, the three of us. So, but Johnny always put in my head, Ludo, you need to have your restaurant. Why a chef like you don't have this own restaurant? And I say, I want to do my own restaurant, but, you know, raising the money, find a location, create the business, have an operation, it takes time. And I never did that before in my life, you know. So, and Johnny always say, you know, man, I help you.
Yeah.
You know, we raise the money together, we put the system together, you know, we have everything already ready for you. And one day I say yes. I say to Johnny and Vinny, let's do it, guys. Let's do it. Let's go find a restaurant and let's go do a restaurant together.
And you ended up opening a restaurant in an old pizzeria in a strip mall.
voilà, called Ruffalo's.
Yeah. Whose idea was that?
In the beginning, the three of us want to open a chicken concept. Because, you know, I've been known for fried chicken. John Venny also been known for fried chicken sandwich, mm-hmm. you know. And we love fried chicken. So we're driving in town with Steve, our broker, and looking for a little spot to do a fried chicken. And we find the Ruffalo's pizza in the strip mall next to Mozza, next to the gas station.
So when you first found the Ruffalo pizza space, you were thinking we could do a chicken concept here?
Chicken concept, you know.
And then when did that idea change?
With Vinny, we went 4 years ago. We went in August in Copenhagen.
Yeah, Mad Food Camp.
Mad Food uh-huh. Camps. And I came back. We want to do, with Vinny, we want to do a little set menu restaurant. Mm-hmm. Boom, we work on that.
Yeah.
After. And after... It just become my restaurant after.
At what point did you say, you know what, guys, I want to have you as my business partners, but I want to do this restaurant as my own, as a chef?
It just become naturally. Mm-hmm. You know, after we realized with Vinny and Johnny, we cannot be three chefs in the kitchen. Yeah. It's too small here. And voilà. So, you know, we put trois mecs together, still make decisions together for the design, for, you know, the ticket system, all the concept, the price. So
it's like 26 seats?
Yeah, 26 seats. Yeah. And two seating every night. Mm-hmm. Yeah, set menu.
Set menu. And how would you describe the food there? And has it changed over the last
the
few
food,
years?
The food, I would say, it's fresh food, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, French technique and flavor around Los Angeles.
And Los Angeles being basically flavors
menu,
of the world.
Yeah, set menu and, you know, you eat what I want. And... that's what it is, you know. Every night it's a show, you know. It's a set menu.
And if you're in town, how often do you try to be there during service?
If I'm in town, I'm over there.
Yeah.
You know, all the time. You know, most of the time I'm in a restaurant. People are surprised to see me all the time.
Yeah. Like, wow, he actually works.
Yeah, he works sometimes. I mean, sometimes I leave a little bit early because I want to see my kids, you know.
Yeah.
But but also I want to be with my cook, you know. I feel bad when I'm not there. Because they are working with me to learn from me. They want to be with me. So, you know, I need to support them too. It's my job as a chef.
And so a couple of years later, you then opened Trois Mecs next door in the strip mall in an old Thai restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of the food you grew up with?
So Trois Mecs was in the strip mall. And next to us, it was a little Thai restaurant. They went out of business. So we decided with the boy to take the location. It was just 800 square feet, very tiny. What are we going to do over there? Bing. I have no idea what I want to do. And I say to the guys, we should do a bar with food. You know, we do a bar. We have a full liquor license. Let's go use that. And we're going to do a bar with food. My idea behind that, it was a restaurant I like in Paris called L'Avant-Comptoir. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a small place, a big bar with a kitchen and the bar together. And here over there, cooks just serve you some little French tapas, hors d'oeuvre, little plate. And people come here, drink, eat, stand up, and that's it. It's very tiny. So I decided to do that, but with a bar, with food, but with very classic dish I was missing from France. And classic, like I did not regret any dishes. It's just classic food. French classic food.
You have the omelette that is usually popular.
Yeah, I become famous for an omelette. Imagine, Adam?
Did you? What is more successful than you thought it would be?
The omelette.
Yeah, but that's
the one. I mean, when
the
people was eating the omelette, you should see the face of people in the restaurant. Like, oh, I never eat an omelette like this. Because I know the omelette is pretty good, you know, because it's very French the way I'm doing that. Like, no coloration, cook very slowly. And, you know, an omelette in France needs to be like a custard.
Yeah.
Like a crème brûlée. It needs to melt in your mouth.
And most Americans, we grow up going to omelettes in bad hotel bar.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
The omelette bar, and it's they put all the chopped up ham and the peppers
crispy,
and onions,
like
and they overcook
like,
it.
Yeah.
And it's terrible.
It's like a crispy crepe almost, you know. And so I become famous for that. You know, it's funny for a little omelette.
There's a funny scene in Mind of a Chef where John and Vinny are talking about how you've loosened up as a chef. How when you first came to LA, you would wear a Speedo to the beach.
Yeah.
And now you're wearing board shorts. You're just letting it hang loose a little bit more.
I know. I've always made, I mean, I was so French at that time. And it's true, the French people, sometimes we dress a little differently, you know. I remember when I met my wife, one day I was dating my wife, Chrissy, and I put a white pen. Like a white jean, a Levi's. you know, like it was a 501. 501 is very, is like a big deal in France, bro. Yeah. Okay. My time is a 96, 98, bro. Yeah. We all have a white Levi's. Okay. And we go out the night with that. Very tight. I love it. And my wife saw me putting this white Levi's. She said, what are you doing? I'm putting my white jean. I was just dating, you know.
That's what I do.
Yeah. You're not going to go outside with that. I said, what? What's the problem with that? You know, and I put a pink shirt too, you know. But it's true. Johnny always, you know, do joke about me the way, still a little bit now, the way I sometimes address or when I tell him story about France, you know.
All right. So there's that very famous, or I may say infamous, photo of you in your book, Crave, the cookbook. Ludo is standing in the ocean with really tight jeans on.
Yeah.
No shirt, total. He has like an 8-pack.
Yeah.
And he's holding, are you holding a salmon in each hand? What are you holding?
Two big wild striped bass from New Jersey, guys. Wild striped bass.
What were you thinking at the time that you took that photo? And what do you think now when you look at that photo?
Man, at that time, it was in 2002. Get a deal to do a book, you know. And I want to do my own book. But, you know, I was not in charge of my own book.
Mm-hmm. You know? Oh, he's going to blame it on someone else.
Yes.
So who convinced you to take your shirt off and get in the ocean with two wild striped bass?
Let's say this girl have a vision on me, you know. You know, she really loved my food. She came to the restaurant, and I think she liked me, you know, like we have a good relationship with her. But, you know, she always say, Ludo, I want Ludo sexy in the book. You know, I want to see him sexy. I want him to see almost naked on the beach, rolling, you know, in the big fish. So actually, I'm lucky I have a jean in my
your Speedo.
Yes. Okay, guys. Okay. But no, I'm finished with two fish, you know,
big
in
ones.
The jean, big yeah. one, you know, half naked in the water, you know, so California,
yeah.
you know. And at that time, if I want my book to be published, I have no choice to put a picture like this. And I spent all the time and this money to do this book, so let's go do it. You know, it was in 2002. It was, you want people to take you seriously, you know. But the picture, you know.
I will say this, though. You were in really good shape back then.
Yeah, I don't know if that time, Adam, in 2002, have you started retouching the picture?
Wait, what? Oh, they retouching the picture? Yeah. Painting in your little ab lines and stuff.
You know?
Retouching. It's an impressive shot. I'm sure there's some Photoshop. Every photo is retouched a bit.
Now it's not six pack, you know. It's one pack now. One pack now. Because we republished the book last year. So I said to Chrissy, my wife, let's go do another picture like this with my real stomach like that. She don't want to do that.
She's like, no.
No.
Let's talk about, it's interesting in terms of staying healthy and eating and being in shape. So that's an interesting part of California, and LA is a very sort of healthy city. Although a lot of you have held on to your French traditions and indulgences and love, and one scene in Mind of a Chef when you're talking about a roast chicken in the fried chicken episode, you've got this beautiful poulet de Brest bird with the head on and the feet and everything. You literally use a stick of butter in that recipe. Americans always say, oh my God, there's like a stick of butter in that recipe. You literally take like 3/4 of a stick, shove it in the cavity, and then put the other quarter on top.
Yeah.
Did you really use that much butter when you make a roast chicken?
Yeah, all the time.
That wasn't just for TV?
No, it wasn't just for TV. Love butter. Of course, we don't eat all the butter, but yes, I want some flavor. I want to baste the chicken. I want the chicken to have a little bath of butter, like swimming in butter. Definitely. With flavor, but yeah, I want butter. You know, I want.
Are you a healthy eater at all in LA? When you do eat healthy, what do you eat? What do you like? He's like, he's having to think on this one. He's like,
look, I eat a lot of salad. I love salad, definitely. Okay. You know, with French vinaigrette.
Are you a juice guy? Do you do the whole juice?
No, I don't do juice. I don't do this thing. No. Listen, I can stop smoking. I can stop drinking alcohol. I cannot stop eating bread or butter. It's crazy.
You're French. See?
Yeah. Every day I eat baguette and butter. And my salad or eggs or something, you know. I don't do really a diet, you know. I just eat small portion.
I think that's what the French have always understood, that, you know, it's like, moderation.
Moderation.
All right, Ludo, we're going to do our lightning round right now.
Mm-hmm.
Got some either or questions.
Okay.
Okay, and you got to answer them. Breast or thigh?
Breast.
Is that what you make? What do you make the sandwich out of?
Breast.
Breast. Bone in or boneless?
Bone in.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's think. Hollywood or Venice Beach?
Hollywood.
Alps or Rockies?
Alps. Alps.
Do you go skiing every year?
Yes, every year. I take my kids.
Are they good? Getting there?
They go straight. They don't stop, but they're going.
Petnat or Nuit Saint-Georges?
What's Petnat?
Petnat. Like the more like the pet naturel, the more organic natural wine. I love that you don't even know what that is.
Sorry. No, I didn't know that, no. No, I would say Nuit Saint-Georges.
Yeah, good Burgundy.
Oh, yeah. And I'm from Burgundy, so be careful of that. I'm not from France, I'm from Burgundy.
Just a redneck from Burgundy.
Voilà.
Guns N' Roses or Nirvana?
Guns N' Roses.
Did you ever see them back in the day?
Yeah.
Yeah. Flour or cornstarch?
Flour.
Because you do, when you do the duck confit fried chicken, you use cornstarch.
Cornstarch. Well, you know.
Why do you do that?
Because that's what I learned with the Chinese food. Mm-hmm. They use cornstarch and I like it too, I think, you know.
And that's more of an Asian style fried chicken.
Yeah.
This is a three-part one. Lakers, Clippers, or Kings?
Kings.
Do you guys go to the hockey games?
Yeah, I love hockey. So if especially I have a Ludo Bird at Staples Center, so I get tickets.
Yeah.
So next time you come, let me know. But yeah, I love hockey.
Fondue or French onion soup?
Fondue.
What's a technique? If I wanted to make fondue, what would I do at home?
Make sure to put a little bit of cornstarch in your fondue. Uh-huh. Like this, the fondue don't break. Because you know when you keep it warm for a long time, sometimes the fat can break.
Yeah, it can separate.
Put a little cornstarch.
Okay.
You know, and a little bit of eau de vie.
Eau de vie.
Like a pear. A little bit of a pear.
Okay.
Yeah, it's good at the end.
I like that. Scrambled or omelet?
Omelette.
Of course. John or Vinny?
Wow.
You only get one of them.
Okay. I would say, sorry, Johnny, I'm going to take Vinny.
Pâté or steak tartare?
Steak tartare.
What's your technique? What's the secret for making a good tartare?
I use mayonnaise. I love it.
Oh, mayonnaise, really?
I know.
Dijon also?
Yeah, Dijon. Yeah. I do almost like a mayonnaise, Dijon, ketchup, sauce, cornichon. I like that when it's mushy like this. I just love it, man, on the tartine. Well, I don't like too much the steak tartare cut with a knife or couteau.
You like it more ground.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
I love it like this. White trash bougon. I don't know. I like it, guys. I love mayo.
What? Oh, God, yes. What cut of beef do you like to use for tartare?
I use a hanger steak.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Last question. Butter or olive oil?
Come on. Come on.
I got to ask you. That's always the last
French
question.
Guys, but I'm not Italian.
Merci, Ludo.
Merci, bon appétit. Merci,
Thank
Adam.
You. Ciao.
This podcast has been brought to you by Carrie Polis, Emma Wertzman, and Lily Sherman, with editing by Mitra Kaboli. Our theme music is by Valerie and the Gradys. We have new episodes every Wednesday, and if you want to tell us about this or any other episode, email us at bonappetitfoodcast@gmail.com. Plus, we're also offering a deal with our podcast listeners. Go to bonappetit.com/gift to see what we have. Thanks for listening.